The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by Me Audio. So here's the deal. If you've ever seen me in a live stream or in an interview or some other kind of video, you've probably seen me wearing some fancy earbuds. For the last couple years, my work buds have been almost exclusively from Me Audio. Excellent drivers, fantastic accessories, and both my wife and I had our ears scanned by the folks at Me Audio for custom molded ear tips. Super comfy. The MX line of Pro in-ear monitors is one of the easiest lineups to understand, starting at $60 and built around actual professional use. Detailed sound and durable construction, but also with some fun options like customizable faceplates. Even if you're not working on stage or in studio, Pro solutions like these are fantastic audio options, and they don't need to break the bank. And the company also supports a lineup of consumer gear with options for true wireless and noise-canceling Bluetooth earbuds, adapters for TVs to stream your audio to nicer headphones, and headsets for kids to help control the volume on fresh, developing ears. I can't stress that last one enough. We have to start kids out with healthier listening habits. It's a great combo, high-quality audio gear built by a team of folks with recording-grade use in mind, but at consumer-friendly prices. But of course, I can do you one better. If you shop the kit at meaudio.com and use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, you can save an additional 10% over their already competitive prices. Once again, meaudio.com, M-E-E-audio.com. Shop some fun kit, promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, 10% off. Keep your ears and your wallet happy at the same time. I want to thank the folks at Me Audio for hooking up the promo code. Now, let's get on with the show. And we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'm Juan Carlos Spagnell, a.k.a. Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this horribly named podcast series. But the Q&A, that's the important part. We like to make this an interactive conversation, talk out the top tech stories of the last week. It's why I like to hold my show on a Monday. Gives us some time to sort out our feels, and we can all come together and have fun chat. This is going to be good times. I was up crazy early, just kind of babysitting an embargo video, which went live on the YouTubes. It's definitely something we're going to be talking about today, both in the housekeeping and in the gadget block in the second half. And I'm playing a little loose with the kind of order of this show. I've got a bunch of news that we can jump into for the first half of the podcast, but I just caught a tweet. Let me see if I can pull this tweet up. The setup is changing with every podcast, so I'm trying to make sure I don't completely bork something here. Yeah, see, like I did not format my web browser properly, but this tweet just popped up. Last call, Pixel info in 6. Interesting. So the made by Google Twitter account might have some news for us about some new Pixel phones very soon. So we're going to be keeping an eye on this breaking news. And that's where I get, like, you know, all of my splash screens and stuff like doo 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 doo. We're going to have to keep an eye on that. Let's see what they have to say. Something tells me that Google's going to be teasing some information about a Pixel with the number 6 in its name. So welcome everybody to the show. My voice is so much stronger, but I'm finding, like, I get these weird little hitches. So it's like strong until it's absolutely not, and it gets real fragile. Apologies to everybody that's catching this live stream. And if you catch the replay or the audio version, you're going to hear a lot of drinking of water and clearing of throat. Dave Burns, Google Nest Mini 6. How messed up would that be if Google, made by Google, teased? Sorry, that really tickled me there. If made by Google teased the number 6 and then completely sidestepped it with, like, hey, we've got a new speaker. It's the sixth speaker that we've come out with. It'd be like Valve making a joke about the number three. All right. Let's get this out of the way here. So yeah, we're going to keep an eye on this. Oh, wait. There's a whole thread. Here's a sneak peek at the newest Google phones powered by Google Tensor, the brand new chip designed by Google, custom made for Pixel. All right, I'm going to preempt the normal housekeeping and all that jazz. It's a bunch of audio gear. We'll save that for the gadget block. Let's jump in. A detail. Whom, the tweet is up. The tweet is up. TK Bay, the tweet is up. Okay. So, yeah. Let's just do this Twitter thread here. Go back into screen share. I'm going to read this all out. So, here's a sneak peek, and they got a pretty picture of a Pixel 6 there, but wait a minute, where's the rest of the thread? Because it says 1 of 13. All right, come on. No, I don't want to reply to the thread. This is making me look Bush League here. 1 of 13, but where are the rest of the replies? Where's the rest of the thread? I hate how Twitter kind of organizes all of this. Maybe we can't. Is that someone else have Gormlord? Aditya, 6 is 2 times 3, Half-Life 3 confirmed. Unfortunately, it does look like Google is going to name this the Pixel 6 Pro. I would have preferred Pixel XL. Pixel and Pixel XL. Oh, wait, let me go into their tweets and replies. Maybe that'll... No? See, this is what I mean. Like, they say this is a thread of 13 tweets. And now I can't even show what's in it all. So, you know what? I'm gonna give this a minute, and then we're going to come back to this. Because this is terrible podcasting right now. I'm doing it live. Okay, yeah, we're gonna come back, but I'm very excited for custom chip for Pixel, this codename Whitechapel, and especially with all of our experiences with premium phones this year, I am absolutely ready for a bunch of tech reviewers to pan it because it's like 5% less powerful in a Geekbench score than a Snapdragon 888, and you can get those in phones for like $200 and a half a ham sandwich now, so nothing Google is doing right now could possibly be worth it. One would hope, man. So have they left the pro out of the hashtag because they know they're going to change it? Maybe. You know what? I would back that play. If you're not going to put something pro grade into the phone to justify calling it a pro, I'd much rather just call it by its size. It's an XL. LFA Reviews is definitely grabbing a Pixel 6 Pro. Dave Burns, why not Pixel Extreme? And everybody, I need words of congratulations. JMX Warrior, I just bagged myself a new job, finally got a permanent position. Congratulations. I know the job hunt for a lot of people out there has been kind of tricky, and companies are in upheaval over, you know, work from home and other criteria. So, you know what? Anyone who's making it work right now, props and congratulations to you. So, let's go ahead and knock out a little housekeeping here. First of all, I hope everyone had a lovely weekend. We were keeping it pretty chill. For me, it was a kind of a race. I had scheduled a meet and greet with the folks at Odyssey before our road trip. Odyssey are kind of like my gateway drug to fancier headphones. Like this is the LCD one. They're not that fancy, but they're pretty fancy. So this is like my first long-term listen on headphones that have planar magnetic drivers. Odyssey is responsible for hurting my bank account, for nicer and nicer and nicer headphones. So I was gonna go down. They have an office in Santa Ana and Santa Ana, and and unfortunately that fell apart right before our road trip. I completely had blown out my voice. We just had a lot of moving parts to put together. We were gonna hit the road. It didn't happen. And so coming back, they were like, "Hey, so we know, we couldn't get that first meeting going. Would you be interested in coming down? Because we have something that we think you'd be interested in." So I went down on Saturday, and they kind of pulled back the curtain Willy Wonka style on a pair of $4,500 headphones. This is Odyssey's first electrostatic headphone, and more than just their big fancy premium headphones. It's just a really interesting story. So we're going to save that for the gadget block in the second half. Also, this last week, it's been a lot of audio. I'm revisiting a USB DAC that's been out for a couple years now. This is the Apogee Groove. It's a little stick USB adapter. You plug it into a computer. It can work on a phone, but it's if anyone's familiar with audio terms, it's kind of an interesting audio technology. It's an ESS DAC. So that's the company, that's the line of DACs for, it's a Saber DAC. But there's four of them. So it's a quad sum DAC. So you put four together. I mean, I don't know if anyone's ever heard of anything like that before. Certainly in the mobile space, that would be a really interesting technology. And it seems if you put a quad sum DAC with a really solid amp into a tiny portable package, it's like a $200 product. So it's just, it's just kind of interesting to talk about with like Apple Music Lossless, Spotify Hi-Fi eventually arriving, Amazon Music HD, Tidal Masters, just a really premium audio experience that if any mobile product had that built into it, it would absolutely be the master of audio. It's just funny that, we don't have those options anymore. Following along in those footsteps, here, let me pull this up. The other dongle DAC I got to play with last week was the THX Onyx. It's a AAA, just an extremely low noise, low distortion amp certification process from THX. And this also has an ESS DAC and a big amp in it. So, again, I just feel like this combination of ESS digital to audio conversion plus big amplifier in tiny package seems to retail for around $200. So, again, if any product had that built into it and was overlooked, maybe by other tech reviewers, they overlooked a $200 feature to add to another phone. I think Dave Burns knows what I'm getting at there. DT Nils making some iPhone jokes. I feel like you guys are all hip. I feel like you're all on the same page with me here. Yeah, from El Jefe, it's almost as if this audio combination just works. Oh, just works and just works really well. Again, so this entire week has been just audio nirvana. I've been doing a round robin. I'm writing up an article. There's a script preview as one of the higher tiers on my Patreon, and I don't do those very often because I don't like people feeling like they're left out. But I did. I wrote up kind of a DAC buying guide, which is going to go live this week. It's a written article talking about kind of a spectrum of solutions from inexpensive dongle DACs to standalone battery-powered portable DACs. It's all about portable audio. Some of the hybrid solutions like my Phios, it's just the right time. I mean, I feel like there's an opportunity here. I don't want to waste this opportunity. I want to bring more people into the fold. Every audio streaming service is making some noise about higher quality streaming. And it's interesting that consumers are actually driving this. It's not techies. Techies keep telling you that you can't hear the difference. So I think this is really exciting. And it's been so much fun. This is like the most fun I've had in 2021. is just going through all these different DACs and listening to the differences and plugging in different headphones and comparing and contrasting. And it's critical listening is a lot of work. I mean, I can burn out my ears very easily, you know, swapping back and forth. I stop hearing the differences. But then getting to drive down to Odyssey and playing with $4,500 electrostatic headphones, this was kind of like the cherry on a delicious sundae of audio goodness. So I'm super, super excited about this timing right now. Because, I feel like this is the first time we've had a chance to kind of bring a few more members into our fold. Like, it's okay to be an audiophile. I'm so tired of techies. You know, it's this kind of hypocrisy. It's like, I'm going to do this review about some premium headphones. They're very expensive. I like hearing better quality audio, and I'm willing to pay more for these really great headphones, but I'm not an audiophile. I'm not one of those stinky nerds who cares about better audio on forums like HeadFi. No, I'm not one of those. You know, like, they poison the well. They make this huge deal out of like, oh, audiophiles are going to make fun of you if you don't listen on FLAC with $10,000 in gear. But it's just like any other hobby. So when we get to the gadget block and we talk more about the Odysseys, I'm going to have a bit more to say about that. But from Nick Fell, is Odyssey letting you demo the LCDX? Or where is it? Or do I need to lend you mine? No, I am hoping that especially after my revisit of the Mobius, and I think I'm the only one who published a video on embargo for the Odyssey Carbon. I'm hoping this is the beginning of a fun relationship with this manufacturer. Cause again, it's not a quick trip. I mean, it is 2 hours for me to drive down to their office. Oh, Jeff, we're in good company. Jeff says, that's me. I'm a stinky audio nerd. I feel seen. Dave Burns, exactly this. I went to an enthusiast forum and they made fun of me. If you prime techies for confrontational, you know, experiences with audiophiles, it shouldn't be a big surprise when you find confrontational experiences with audiophiles. But I'm gonna start, because again, I used to jokingly say I'm not an audiophile, I'm an audio snob. I feel like there's an editorial bubbling inside of me about how maybe it's just okay to call yourself an audiophile if you want better audio. Maybe that can be fine. Because like any other hobby, there are so many people that are really good ambassadors. I am not a good ambassador because I'm a snarky git. I mean, like, I like certain flavors of debate, and that is confrontation, and that's not the best ambassador. But there are so many people that genuinely fly this flag. Darko Audio, Josh Valour, Steve Gutenberg, Audiophiliac, is that what he calls his channel? Is it New Record Day? I like catching up on their videos from time to time. If you really go to the enthusiasts and you're interested in learning, you've got people that are ready. Like, they're just going to start throwing as much information at you as they can. It's when you go there and you're like, well, but I mean, like, why would you spend that much money? Because my XM4s sound like 95% as good. And you're like, wow, you have just demonstrated exactly why you don't know anything about premium audio. And you came in with a confrontational tone. So now we're going to have to make fun of you. That's the same of any hobby. You go into someone at an enthusiast tier, be like, oh, but justify your existence. Justify your existence to my satisfaction. Yeah. Yeah, you're going to find hostility. Yeah, I mean, Jeff, this is totally true. I mean, this is what happens when you hit that enthusiast tier. I just read HeadFi and subreddits, but I rarely interact. So many gatekeepers and people just looking to argue and nitpick. That's a hard pass for me. but I also feel like there's always, like, as people start developing their tastes is when they're also the most confident. So that's where you get those keyboard warriors. It's the same thing with phones. You know, like every time I say, hey, this was like a really good phone. Nuh-uh. You're like, okay, I guess you know better than me, random person on the internet who did not use this phone. But once you push beyond that, what you should find are those sort of sage, wizened, and learned individuals that really can share knowledge. But they're not going to share knowledge if what they're met with is like a confrontational or hostile tone. And that's where I don't think average techies really understand how dismissive they've been of audio. I mean, you've got certain tech reviewers who are completely writing it off, where way earlier in their careers, they were making videos about, well, this is what a DAC is, and this is how it can really improve your audio setup. And now it's like, well, but I mean, like premium listening on AirPods Max is like totally good enough, you know? So we could see how they shifted to appease a certain market demographic as opposed to being the really good educators and ambassadors that they could be with the channels that they have of their size. From Tech Potato, I regularly refuse to impart knowledge if people can't even write in proper sentences with capital letters. And from McCorkerin3, is the Hi-Fi Guides forum any good? That's really tough. Again, a forum is going to be a place where people of varying degrees of experience are going to intermingle. I think the thing I find most consistent about enthusiast forums, photography forums, audio forums, displays, talking about gaming. Think about the debates people get into just on SoC for, you know, AMD versus Intel. Look at car forums. Again, once you crest into an enthusiast tier, you're talking about a very specific kind of conversation. And audio is no different. It just, audio seems a little bit more like voodoo to a lot of people out there. I think it's harder to get into in a meaningful way. And so a forum is only as good as the people you interact with. And sometimes you're going to get great interactions and other times you're going to find a lot of conflict. But I think especially in audio conversations, one of the major problems I face is analytically trying to share an emotional experience. 40 seconds into Rage Against the Machine's Killing in the Name Of, Zach De La Rocha hits you with, killing in the name of, and then the guitars carry the theme. That moment gives me goosebumps. So how do I analytically describe what it is about that transition of silence and distorted male vocal into distorted guitars that gets me lit up? I don't know that I can. So we end up talking past each other because someone is going to use a word like sweet. Another person is going to use a word like warm. Someone's going to talk about clarity. Other people are going to talk about details. There are objective ways that we can rate and measure and compare the science and the technology that goes into audio reproduction. But that audio reproduction ultimately arrives at an emotional experience that's based heavily on your unique biology. So even if we can agree on some of the testing methodology of how sound is reproduced, I also need to go into that conversation to tell you I have extremely asymmetrical hearing loss. I can barely hear 15K in my right ear. I can still generally perceive 17K in my left, which is pretty good for a dude in his 40s who used to stand in front of all the subwoofers at clubs. So how do I convey that to you and I also have a ton of scar tissue in my ears from when I was a kid. I used to get ear infections. I have psoriasis. Psoriasis scarring goes into my ear canals. My experience with audio products biologically will be different than yours. So it starts to sound like snake oil. You know, it starts to sound like the emperor has no clothes. It's like, well, you spent $4,500 on these headphones and you can't even tell me why they're better. Like it's a next level conversation. And if we only keep having these discussions at like the entry level buyer guide, then people like me who genuinely get lit up about learning more about premium audio reproduction, I mean, like, I don't want to do video after video after video of like Bluetooth codecs explained. I made that video a couple years back. I feel like I'm good until something new comes around. So it's just tricky. It's a heavy mix of subjective emotional recognition and something that has a partial objective component to it. And it's really easy for those types of conversations to descend into vernacular. You know, like you'll get 10 pages into a conversation about a pair of headphones and then realize it took 10 pages of debate just for two people to agree on two different words meaning the same thing. So it's pretty rough. Yeah, exactly. And there's this too. From Tech Tech Potato, I change my EQ settings every few months based on how I'm feeling. That's so critical. I mean, what I'm listening for in audio was informed by 20 years of voice recording. In the world of recording, I'm doing it wrong. I'm not a music producer. I'm not recording singers. I'm not recording the human voice at its most powerful. I'm recording the human voice at its absolute lowest intensity for most applications. It's that trained my ear. So I trained my ear in kind of the worst possible way to judge music. All right, but let's get into a couple news stories here real quick. I just want to fly through news because now I'm kind of curious to see if Google's going to get back on there. Hold on, let me just check in real quick. Made by Google. Oh, it looks like more of their thread is finally up. Oh, geez. So it's like 1 of 13 and then 9 of 13. All right, I'm going to have to just wait and then sift through this, but we're going to get back to it for the gadget block. Okay, so that was a super rambling housekeeping, but not really. Some of this we're also going to cover when we get to the gadget block too. So I might be repeating myself in the second half of this because I feel very defensive of audiophiles after listening to these headphones. But all of the stories we're going to be talking about, all of the videos, all of the news links, all of the articles, everything you're going to be able to find on somegadgetguy.com for this week's show notes. And this first story is a very complicated speech kind of situation, but it's something that we've been discussing since before the lockdown in 2020. At the end of 2019 and the beginnings of the 5G rollout, we were seeing these articles and these stories about the spread of misinformation, and especially for things like 5G towers. Like in the UK, it became this weird trend of torching, destroying telecommunications equipment for fears of the health impacts of 5G. And later that kind of morphed into the disinformation surrounding COVID-19. And it's a very precious conversation. The main methods we have of disseminating this info are on private company services. Twitter is not a public institution. YouTube is not a public institution. And so I think from the letter of the law, I don't believe there is a First Amendment issue in a platform pulling content. If we want a public forum, we need to create a public forum. So, oh, hey, real quick, I got to jump in here. Adriana and Whip gifting tier one subs to TED Talks Tech 405 winning Dolly Spectra and Tomic 102. That is super rad. I very, very, very much appreciate it. Adriana and Whip. That was pretty sweet. And thank you so much for supporting production on this channel. That was epic. And I thank you tremendously. Here, let me get this out of the way. And let me get this down here. Okay, sorry. So McCorkran, I mean, again, I'm not saying this is an easy issue. This is a great comment, by the way. The bigger issue is antitrust. They're too big and they have too much power over shaping the narrative of any issue. So I completely agree that we need a reform. We need to re-examine our relationships with mega data corporations. I don't believe YouTube should be able to hide behind Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, claim it's not really a publisher, but it really does publish and it has editorial content. It's all really messy. But I also don't believe there is a First Amendment issue unless you believe the government should be allowed to force you or compel speech. So if the government says, you need to say this, I feel that's a worse harm to the First Amendment than letting a private company pull content off of their platform. I feel compelled speech is a very serious harm to the nature of free speech. Your ability, your right to not say something is just as precious as your ability to say something. Very clumsy way for me to say that. All right. So short story, incredibly long. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this article. We want to keep up with how platforms are handling the spread of disinformation. And one of the main tools at their disposal is deplatforming, either muting a channel or barring a channel from posting or just nuking it from existence. Sky News Australia barred for a week by YouTube over COVID misinformation. This is coming from BBC News. YouTube has barred Sky News Australia from uploading new content for a week, saying it breached rules on spreading COVID-19 misinformation. It issued a strike under its three-strike policy, the last of which means permanent removal. YouTube did not point to specific items, but said it opposed material that could cause real-world harm. And this is another issue that I think is going to be very interesting for legal scholars to look back on is, what is the legal liability of YouTube hosting content that eventually ends in someone's injury or someone's death? I'm not legally qualified to weigh into that on any great degree. I have tweeted some questions like that to Legal DJ. He's never gotten back to me, but I'd be very interested in seeing like what could the long-term ramifications of this be. At some point, will news agencies have to face any kind of correction for the stories that they've published or the stories that they've highlighted that have led to the spread of a deadly pandemic? Could you engage in a class action lawsuit against Sky News? I genuinely don't know. I mean, that's what we're in uncharted territory here, from traditional news agency, online publication, digital distribution, and how consumers interact with social media. I mean, this is such an ugly web of interconnected issues. But it's critical that we keep an eye on it. You know, the whole notion of deplatforming is kind of a distasteful one, but at some point you've got to try and halt the spread of disinformation. When we were watching those 5G cell phone towers getting burned, when we see like the impact of anti-science campaigns or flat earth or anti-vax materials, or these cause real harm to people, you know, like we're terrified of Delta, you know, like at some point something needs to change in how these platforms monetize that kind of traffic. And I don't think they've got any clue what the solution's going to be, but they've got to try something. a lot of jokes about from Dave Burns. But Juan, isn't a YouTuber's job giving hot takes about topics they're barely aware of? Yeah, but we're talking about Sky News. We're not talking about my channel. but yes, I mean, I suppose if they're on the YouTube, Dave Burns, oh, you nerd. I'm more afraid of United. What was Delta? We love to fly in at shows. I can't remember their marketing anymore. I haven't even considered getting on a plane in so long. We've started having some of those pre-pro conversations like, will there be a CES next year? And just like, well, how are we going to cover it if there is? And I'm seriously feeling like, man, 2022 might not be the year to really push that. I might gracefully bow out. And that kills me because at this point, we were talking, I mean, earlier in this year, we were talking about trying to do like a fun friend meetup in Vegas and kind of, do CES, but then take a vacation afterwards where we could all get together and hang out and catch up. And I'm feeling less and less confident that that's going to be possible. Simon says hypno. Misinformation is a virus, but viruses are made up anyway. Oh, tech potato. I'm still planning to go to a Bay Area. I'm still planning to go to the Bay Area to an Intel event on October 29th. I am not invited to that Intel event. I would maybe consider a San Francisco trip. I mean, a little commuter flight. I'm in the plane for less than an hour. I feel confident I could double mask up, throw on a hoodie, throw on some sunglasses. Wedge myself into the corner by a window, maybe get some kind of James Bond rebreather apparatus or some scuba gear. I'm sure they'd let me on the plane with it. I feel pretty confident I could do that and then immediately go to some kind of decontamination shower and I'd be okay. It's less like the travel and more the size of the event. Like I feel like that Intel event would be pretty small compared to like hitting the booths at a CES in Vegas. That's the one that worries me more, where Vegas becomes something of a super spreader event. So, 20 miles. Don't say that, man. That's gonna get me kicked off. Like, that's gonna put me on a list. That's terrible. All right, moving right along. I don't want to keep sticking with news stuff here. So I do want to get this. I just think it's hilarious how many famous people are suing movie distribution houses now. It all kicked off with this story here. Scarlett Johansson sues Disney for breach of contract over Black Widow release. Disney's decision to release Black Widow on Disney Plus at the same time it hit theaters has sparked a legal battle with Scarlett Johansson, the actress tasked with playing the Marvel superhero. I love that last part of the sentence. That's actually one of the main reasons why I wanted to just read this intro. The actress tasked with playing the Marvel superhero. No one else would do it. There's poor ScarJo in the back of the room. All right. I'll go.
Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on rglowingrectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
The reason why I just wanted to keep an eye on this story too, I feel like there's going to be a tipping point of more Hollywood stars. Not I mean, okay, so part of the problem is they probably drafted these contracts in a world before quarantine. You watch the Black Widow movie, it reads pretty clear that there was a part of this in early production, probably before Civil War. So this has been a long-going effort to try and get Black Widow her own solo film. And it eventually just at some point Disney goes, I don't know, push it out there, make some money on it. And the way that we do box office accounting is already super suspect anyway, but she probably had an agreement in her contract before we had any notion of same day digital, day and date release of home streaming for also cinema.
And I feel like that contract should have been renegotiated before playing that kind of game with your distribution. And I feel like we're going to see a lot more of this. The initial lawsuits are going to be very, very brief. And then representation, the agents and managers that handle these stars are going to get way savvier about, hey, so if we want to cut at the back end for this really famous person to be in your low budget movie, that has to include everything. So if you can't tell us what bucket of money you get on streaming for the release of this film, then, you know, The Rock isn't going to do your movie. I feel like that's got to become critical. Again, seeing as how we still have this ongoing ebb and flow, this sort of surge and normalization of a pandemic disease in our society, it's going to be a little while before I even feel comfortable going to a movie. So I'm really hoping that these contracts don't put like a chilling effect on digital release. Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, it's not just that she wants the back end points. This is from Gary the Fireman. She wants back end points like Jack Nicholson got for playing the Joker. I'm sure it was a part of her initial contract, but I feel it's bad faith to change up how that money is accounted for if the contract was originally built for a cinema distribution deal up front with a secondary market being streaming services. So again, I'm fully supporting these actors because I don't think you should be able to just change up the distribution, which radically changes how the money is accounted for, and then just be. So one of the great replies, I mean, like a Disney legal, I don't think it's I don't know if it's in this article. There was a reply from like a Disney spokesperson just saying like, yeah, we realize this changes the nature of our agreement with Ms. Johansson, but it's going to result in giving her increased visibility for future projects in her career. I mean, it was literally like, we're going to pay her an exposure. You're like, I don't think Scarlett Johansson needs exposure. I wish I could find that quote again. It was hilarious. But yes, this is a brave new world. Even in the entertainment communities, we're going to have some significant changes in how we sort of go about valuing how this media is produced. So this is a good comment from Jonah here. Unlike HBO Max, Disney is charging extra for the new movie releases, so I can totally understand why she is doing this. And it should be easier to track the money that was contributed to Disney Plus. Like, you should be able to, like, hey, we saw all these people spend $30. She gets a cut of that. That was the deal. Pray I alter it no further. All right. Moving right along. Yeah, Ted, it's hilarious. Damn, even A-list celebrities still get exposure currency. And exposure ain't paying the bills. You die from exposure. All right. In kind of our previous conversation about YouTube and Sky News, I've got a pair, and both of these are coming from Engadget. I've got a pair of Spotify stories that I want to highlight here real quick. Spotify CEO doesn't believe the platform has editorial responsibility over podcasts. The Joe Rogan Experience performed above expectations last quarter. Joe Rogan's podcast has become one of the most listened to shows on Spotify since the platform added it to its lineup last year. It also became one of the most controversial due to Rogan's choice of guests and his own views. Spotify doesn't have any plans to do anything about it, though, because the company's CEO doesn't believe the platform should have any say on podcasters' content. When Axios asked Spotify CEO Daniel Ek, is that how you say his name? Ek? In an interview, whether the company should have editorial responsibility over podcasts like Rogan's, Ek responded that Rogan is just one of its many creators. So this is what's going to be kind of an interesting conversation following in the footsteps of YouTube and Facebook and other large publisher distribution digital kinds of companies. This one's actually a little bit stickier, I would imagine. Spotify has spent millions of dollars to bring Joe Rogan on as an exclusive podcast producer for their platform. How do we judge the truthiness of the information that's disseminated? At what point do we look at, you know, oh, well, look at all these numbers, all the people that are listening. Spotify gets to profit from this. They get to sell ad dollars on that. They don't have editorial control over the podcasts, but they're paying money to promote those podcasts. They're paying money to exclusively distribute those podcasts. And I don't know. To me, this is just a wonderfully complicated. So they're not editors in a traditional sense, but they are publishers in disseminating this content. And they own it even more. So if something extremely problematic or harmful is disseminated on the Joe Rogan podcast, what level of liability does Spotify have? You know, it's not enough to say, well, we don't have editorial control over Joe Rogan. You're like, you kind of do. You kind of do in that you choose to publish his content and you host it and you've paid for it. So if something Joe Rogan says hurts someone, do they have a legal claim to extracting money from your organization? It's, to me, this is incredible. Incredibly legally complicated. Comments like that from a CEO don't help. Because on the flip side, even though there's all of this competition, Apple Music is doing lossless. Like I said, Amazon Music HD is coming in at, I think, one of the lowest price points for a higher quality music streaming service. This other story from Engadget I thought was interesting following in the footsteps. Spotify added more paying customers than free ones last quarter. 3 months ago, Spotify predicted that user growth would start declining because COVID-19 had prompted so many people to sign up than expected. Today, the audio giant was proved right, as new signups fell to 9 million new users in the most recent quarter. That said, slower growth isn't always a bad thing. Of that 9 million figure, 7 million users signed up for premium versus just 2 million who went ad-supported. It means that Spotify was able to announce a second successive quarter of profitability after a long period of losses. The total number of Spotify users now stands at 365 million, of which 165 million are paying for premium. That is higher than I would have assumed. So, whatever they're doing at Spotify, it seems to be holding out, seems to be working okay. Again, I'm going to be really curious to see, like, right now, the big fight. Apparently, we can only ever entertain two big fights, and then we have, like, a bunch of smaller players in any given space. And the big fight seems like it's going to be between Spotify and Apple Music. I'm curious to see if Google will eventually create some kind of hi-fi or high-res or lossless category for YouTube music, especially because so much of the YouTube catalog probably already has CD quality audio somewhere on a server attached to those files. Amazon HD, I think, is an interesting outlier. So many people likely, if they're playing with Amazon at all, mostly just through Prime. But then I feel like then you're going to have a whole other tier of like Qobuz or Tidal Masters. Some more boutique-y solutions that people can kind of jump onto also. It's kind of interesting. Again, consumers are driving this interest. We're finally clawing our way back to CD quality audio, and Spotify hasn't even announced their hi-fi strategy yet. I was expecting it by now, but they're probably, you know, making adjustments to combat Apple Music lossless. And at the same time, they're still fighting this fight of you can't sign up for our service on an iPhone because of the way that Apple takes a cut of all of our streaming services. So it's tricky. It's tricky. No, no one's going to join me on some classic hip hop. All right, let's wrap up news just with, Gabaletta. Let's talk a few of these comments real quick. I use YouTube Music because it's included in my subscription to my YouTube Red, but I loathe using it because it's not as intuitive as Google Play Music was. Completely agree there. Amazon announced a free upgrade to all of its subscribers to HD quality the day that Apple announced their free lossless audio. Some people asking about what Restream is from Nick Fell. Cobaz is my favorite. They pay artists per stream an order of magnitude better than Spotify, 5 times better than Tidal. Apple is somewhere between Spotify and Tidal. And again, I still feel it's tricky. Simon says Hypno and Paul Puri, you got my back to rock a rhyme. Thanks, guys. I was feeling really old and not cool. Those are still true, but I don't like feeling that way. yes. Sorry, I just kind of caught into that. Cobaz looks great. That's what I was listening to for most of my field trip down to Odyssey. They had their playlist up, which I should link. I should link the Odyssey playlist. The other solution is just buying music outright. Right now, I'm in between premium music streaming services because I want to see what Spotify Hi-Fi is going to do. And I've been kind of in this holding pattern for a couple months. So I take the money that I would have spent on Tidal Masters and I buy albums. I try to find an artist's direct webpage where if they sell directly, I try to buy directly from them. If not, I go to HD Tracks. Or some of the other FLAC services. And I'm just kind of building up my own permanent collection of high-res music. It's on my NAS. I can access it anywhere. I've got a data connection. So again, I feel like there are opportunities. If you really, really like an artist, set some money aside and contribute directly. When Run the Jewels, when RTJ4 came out, man, $10. $10 to get their album in Wave. I mean, I jumped on before they even offered FLAC. I wish I'd waited just a minute because it only took like a couple weeks for them to offer FLAC. But I bought that album like day two that it was out. And it was $10. It was like, that's $10 really well spent. So, Simon, I appreciate it, man. You have my back. yes, 2Turbo. I will. I will link the Odyssey playlist. If you give me a second, I might be able to drop it into the chat. Odyssey Cobaz. Doop, doop, doop. Yeah, here it is. Here, I'm going to drop it in the chat, but then I'll also stitch it to the show notes. I think that should show up as a link for everybody in the chat. So, I was listening to quite a bit of this, during my listen down at their headquarters. And then of course I also like kind of brought my own little collection of songs and stuff. It was pretty great. all right. I'm going to take a quick pause here. We can chat out the subreddit. And get this there. There we go. Every podcast has a subreddit. It's a place you can hang out. You can chat. You can talk to people who are like-minded. My subreddit is focused on trying to build a platform to help promote content creators in the tech space that we feel deserve more attention. If you go to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, you're going to see a really broad collection of content creators, tech reviewers, editorialists. I'm always putting out the call for more written articles. A lot of it's really video heavy, but it's also representing a wider, broader community than the recommendations that you're going to get from YouTube. Go to YouTube, you subscribe to someone's channel and they only have like 1,000 subscribers. YouTube is going to jump through every hoop to try and get you to subscribe to a much, much, much larger channel. Oh, you like this little tech channel. You must like this guy who's got 10 million subs. You're like, YouTube, read the room. I'm going out of my way to subscribe to smaller channels or just channels that like maybe they aren't pulling the kind of traffic that they used to as the algorithm changes on them. So reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. These are the top stories voted up by the community on the subreddit. And I'm feeling really good. Something in the air. I'm telling you, there's just something different about the right now. Audio is such a fun conversation in current day. And I'm not terribly surprised that my video took it to the top. I am leading my subreddit. Does not always happen. Last couple of weeks, I feel like I've been just kind of mixing it up mid-pack. THX Onyx DAC overkill for Apple lossless? ? I was really happy with how this little DAC review came out. I feel like the Onyx is a killer little audio solution for folks looking for something portable. It is expensive, but it does the gig really, really well. In the number two spot, Freedom Phone, an interesting idea ruined by lazy execution from Omar Zahran. And then in number three, bringing up the number three spot, OnePlus Nord N200 5G unlocked, $199, limited one day only sale, coming from Jay Williams. Jay Williams, the GOAT. Right immediately rounding out the top five, though, we've got Odyssey LCD X 2021 version. So Odyssey also refreshed the LCD X, and it's a $1,200 headphone. And then number five, my Apogee Groove video. Ooh, ooh. So pretty much all this audio. Treat your ears better. It's been kind of wonderful. You know, like we keep cycling on these topics. What is a DAC? And if I have to write that article one more flipping time, I'm going to smash my face into my keyboard. But I don't want to lose the opportunity here. I don't want to fall behind this opportunity. And the ultimate mission is getting people to consider some kind of chain of higher quality audio also results in a lot of people, not everyone, but a lot of people listening in healthier ways. We can stave off some of this rise in hearing loss. We talked recently about the correlating data trends of advanced hearing loss, especially around the frequencies of sound for human speech, and how it dovetails very, very closely with rates of dementia. There's got a 90% prediction rate. If someone is experiencing a certain type of hearing loss, they're probably going to suffer from some kind of degenerative brain disease later in life. We need to treat our ears better in current day. So I'm stoked. Like in the top five, I got to bookend my own subreddit. But so many other stories, so many other videos, so many other articles. And just a good audio theme as we're kind of in between smartphone releases. Y'all can claim rigged, but you got to get in there and vote. And that's where we need your participation. That's where we need your contributions. We're getting more submissions. We're getting more subscribers every day. I think we bumped up another 8 subscribers. We're over 1,900 now. Like legit, not just rounded up on Reddit. But don't be stingy with the upvotes. You know, if you go to drop an article, you go to share a video, click that up arrow and help support some of the other people that are making cool stuff. Because I guarantee you, you will find people on Glowing Rectangles that aren't being served to you on YouTube. You're going to find some of your new favorite commentators. You're going to find some people just starting their channel. You're going to find people with established channels, but in other regions. And you're going to dig what they've got. So help. Contribute, support, be active, and find ways that you can share this content because it makes a huge difference to people trying to get some more traffic to kind of build up their channel. It reinforces like why they're making this cool stuff in the first place. reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and tell them Juan sent you because you'll be telling me because I'm the main moderator there. I just made Jeff a moderator, so El Jefe Reviews is also one of the main mods. I think Andrew is still digging in there too. Fat Produce. Yeah, he's still on. So he's a good dude. Good people, good content. Give it a share. Oh, and Steve Q3 Becker just subscribed with Prime. Let's see, how long has Steve been a subscriber for 19 months? Thanks so much for jumping on, man. I definitely appreciate it. And that's huge. And I very much a hearty thank you for supporting the production here and supporting the streams. So let me take another drink of water here. Raymondit is definitely saying Google Day, which is true. And so Charlie, we don't need a wand restriction on our glowing rectangles. We need people to get in there and upvote. Don't hate the player. I'm playing the game, y'all. You gotta hate the game. You don't hate the player. We're talking about practice. Not a game. Practice. Get in there. Share the Reddit links on your favorite social media platforms to garner more attention. Cross post to appropriate subreddits to bring more traffic to those posts, and click the little up arrows. And it should be pretty easy to take me down on my own subreddit. But if you're just in there to downvote, I'll disable downvoting. It's one of my favorites. I abuse that reference so much. Iverson was one of my all-time faves. And again, just so much bravado, and he could back it up. And I love practice. We talk about practice. All right. No, he's amazing, and I love that moment in sports madly. All right, let's get into the gadget block. I wanted to at least highlight this because I don't even know I'll have time as we wrap up the year. I really want to spend more time with Motorola. I did one of the lower cost. I can't even remember which model now. Yeah, that's really going to bug me. But Republic Wireless sent me one of their new Motos. They've had a long running relationship with Motorola, and it was a great little phone, and just like epic battery life. So when the announcement hit, it was kind of quiet. I guess there's going to be a bigger announcement. This is like the announcement to the announcement that still gave us all the details on the phone. I'm gilding this lily, but of course we're talking about the new Motorola Edge 20 Pro. There's going to be a periscoping telephoto, a 144 hertz screen, 4,500 milliamp hour battery, 5G connectivity, 12 gigs of RAM, 256 gigs of storage, 30 watt charging, no wireless charging. But one of the things that I thought was kind of interesting is for the top of the line, the Premium Pro, the most expensive phone in this lineup, they're opting for the Snapdragon 870. So in terms of just outright processing power, it seems like a little bit of a lateral move from the last Edge Plus. I'm a little less familiar with all of Motorola's naming convention because I haven't gotten my hands on one. And both my Lenovo and Motorola contacts like are no longer really repping the company. So like the people I used to talk to have kind of moved to different divisions and stuff. So even just kind of reaching out saying like, I desperately want to show off Ready 4. I'd love to talk about your phones. And then I kind of just get crickets back. But this one seemed interesting. I feel like hitting the right price point and sticking with the Snapdragon 870 is a really smart play that not a lot of companies have examined well. I mean, like the only phone I've gotten my hands on with an 870 was that Black Shark, a gaming phone. But the performance consistency of the 870 still seems better in a lot of applications than the hotter and thirstier Snapdragon 888. Excuse me. So again, this just kind of reads funny. You know, you're gonna have a lot of people. Oh, this Motorola flagship is like last year's phone. What's going to be, I think, a bit more critical. I wouldn't base price on chipset anymore. if you have a need that the 888 can better handle, then you need to buy a phone with an 888. If you're talking more average consumer, you should really be shopping like 765s. I mean, seriously, that chipset is so good. And when you pair it with a big battery, it's just a monster daily driver performer. So this new like Moto Edge 20 Pro Plus LMNOP, we're looking at around an $800 phone. So it's selling for 699 euro, which to me doesn't sound too far off for the hardware, but it is still a little concerning that Moto is only committing to 2 years of security updates and at least two major OS upgrades. I'm okay with the OS upgrades. I actually feel like for a lot of folks out there, it's not that big a perk if the full operating system upgrade isn't extremely well polished and optimized for an older phone. You know, like I get a phone that launched with Android 10. The manufacturer has to go back and make sure Android 13 is really well polished for that older hardware, especially considering that those phones are likely going to have a couple years of battery degradation hitting them too. I don't think a lot of manufacturers really live up to that obligation, even if they're saying, well, we're going to give you 4 years. Cool. But when I update the OS, is it going to tank the performance on my phone? Because that's what most consumers expect now. I did sort of a random survey of all my family and friends. They all kind of, yeah, every time I update my phone, it gets slower. Like, it's just common knowledge at this point, regardless of whether or not it's actually true. But the big problem I have is only 2 years of security updates. And I really want to see. Motorola had that label. They were a business-grade communications device. You know, especially before Google bought them. They had the reputation, like, if you wanted to travel, you had yourself an IBM ThinkPad and a Motorola, a StarTAC, you know, like back in the day, that was the name. I kind of feel like Lenovo's current stewardship of this label is a little bit more disposable. I feel like a Motorola phone should represent multiple years for that consumer. It doesn't matter if it's a cheap phone or an expensive phone, like that's what a Moto label should be. So that bothers me more, especially at 700 euro. I feel like you could get 3 to 4 years out of a device like that. But if the software is kind of capped at 2 years of security patches, it's an artificial pain point to encourage someone to flip their phone after they've spent more on a premium tiered device. So I'm good on the hardware. The hardware looks really interesting, and I still want to try and take one for a spin, especially now, like kind of sprucing up their camera stack. I really want to play with Ready 4. I need to get my hands on Motorola's desktop mode, but I'm having a harder time recommending a premium Motorola if the expectation is it's sort of off the island after 2 years. So, interesting. I thought it was interesting. But again, I think it's a smart play tackling a Snapdragon 870. I wish more manufacturers had played around with some of that gear. A real quick story. I don't think anyone's going to be terribly surprised by this, but it could do with, I think, a little bit more explicit confirmation from Apple. Like, we're kind of reading between the lines on earnings reports. But for anyone out there who's interested in shopping the iPhone 13, we're probably looking at supply issues. Hold on. This is written up by Sharmishte Dati over at Gizbot. This is where I've caught the article first. iPhone 13 series are among the most discussed topics in the tech world. We've seen leaks and rumors regarding possible designs on the upcoming iPhone 13 series. Surprisingly, Apple's chief financial officer, Luca Maestri, has now given substantial information regarding the iPhone 13 series. For one, Maestri warns Apple fans of a possible shortage of iPhone and iPad units in the future. I imagine that there's going to be sort of a mainstream focus, a lot of consumers looking at keeping up with iPhone 11s and iPhone 12s, and that the iPhone 13 is going to be manufactured in smaller batches per region to fulfill the expected sales. I think a lot of manufacturers, and even Apple, being the most profitable tech company on the planet, is really going to work hard at not having an abundance of stock just piling up on shelves. So you get in line, you pay your money, and eventually they'll get the phone to you, but it's not going to be just roll up and easily grab whatever model of iPhone and whatever color, whatever storage size that you want. So I feel like that's kind of an expected happening in our current smartphone market. So Nick Fell, I love the way that you phrase this question, because I'm not going to pick on you, but I'm going to pick on you just a little bit because I love you like a brother. When was the last time an Android update actually added a feature you use regularly anyways, tongue sticking out emoji? So I know we're messing around here, but I love that question because it allows me to point to the fact that for Android core features and services, increasingly, that's going to come from Google Play services updates, not from the full operating system update. So one of the features that I've been like, we did the road trip and I got to go visit my family. We visited my wife's family in rural New Mexico. We visited my family in just outside Albuquerque, New Mexico. Almost all of them are on Android phones. So one of the fun things that I got to show off, because I haven't gotten to see them since this became a more supported feature, was Nearby Share. Android users have almost no experience using AirDrop-style file transferring. And that goes all the way back to Android 6. So even though my cousin, he's on a Galaxy S8, his wife, my wife's sister, is on a she's on a Galaxy S8, and their son is on a Galaxy S10. All of them have access to Nearby Share. Same thing with my mom. She's on a OnePlus 6T, and she's like, "Oh, that was such a cute photo that you took of Lex when we went to the Albuquerque Zoo." And I said, "Hey, hold up your phone." And I did the little chain link Nearby Share icon, and she said, "Okay, approve." And then I said, "Okay, now here's the file." And she downloaded it, and it was great. So again, it's not the same. This is what's kind of exciting, is even if you don't get the OS update, it's not like an iPhone. New features aren't held back by the OTA. New features are regularly still arriving as part of Google Play services. You don't need to buy a new phone to get Nearby Share. If you had an iPhone XS, you had to buy a whole new phone just to get night mode on the camera, even though that camera and that hardware was perfectly capable of doing low light photo stacking. So this, I think, is one of the critical strengths of the more fluid Android ecosystem that we don't get to talk about as much as I wish.
Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Hey there, Juan, and hey there, you. This is Jason Howell from All About Android over at the twit.tv podcast network. Juan has been a guest on All About Android a number of times. In fact, we have awesome guests on the show each and every week, and we'd love for you to check out the show if you haven't already. Twit.tv/AAA is where you can go to find new episodes of All About Android. Each and every week, we talk about the top Android news, hardware, apps. We have a reviews portion called The Arena. It's very competitive, but in a fun way. We have a really great time doing this show, and we would love for you to join us sometime and check it out. We get journalists from throughout the Android world joining us. We even sometimes get Googlers who are actually making Android on the show to talk about what we love so much about the world of Android. That's twit.tv/AAA for new episodes of All About Android each and every Tuesday. All right, Juan, back to you.
So, yes, iPhone 13 probably going to have some constraint, going to have some issues. All right. So here's what I want to do, because we're running well ahead of schedule. Before I jump into all of my audiophile conversing, I want to go back to this made by Google thing and see if we can untangle this list of, oh, is it properly ordered now? It's properly ordered. We can talk about it. All right. Let me pull screen share back up. So made by Google, here's a sneak peek at the newest Google phones powered by Google Tensor. Let's start outside and work our way in. Pixel 6 Pro will come in three color combos. Pixel 6 has three color combos too. Pro tip, the Pixel phones with more space above the camera bar equals the 6 Pro. Okay, so there looks like there's going to be a little bit more rear forehead on the Pixel 6 Pro as compared to the Pixel 6. Here, I can blow this image up just a little bit more. But we're looking at the color combinations now. Oh, man. I think my favorite color combo is going to be Pixel 6. So I love like the panda style pixels, but I love this Pixel 6 has a white main backplate, the black trim along the sides, and then it looks like a light yellow strip above the camera module. And I wish like one of the 6 Pros had some kind of pink option also, because there's like a pink on pink two-tone Pixel 6. So it looks like the 6 Pro are going to come in white and gray, dark gray, and light gray, and then sort of a really ugly tapioca with like a 70s style tan. So I really don't like that. I don't like that color combo at all. If I'm able to get my hands on a Pixel 6 Pro, now that I've said that out loud, it's very likely that's the one I'll get. But I don't like it. From Abraham here before, some reviewer said the camera's too bulky. From Paul Puri, if I upgrade my Patreon account, will you promise not to sing like that again? Well, let's have a membership drive. Let's see. If more people upgrade their Patreons and say they don't want me to sing, then I won't sing. But if more people upgrade their Patreons and tell me to sing more, then I'm going to sing more. But yeah, Steve, absolutely agree. I'm really digging the visor look. Again, it looks like Bender and Jordy LaForge and Cylons, and I dig it so much. So moving right along. Hello, camera bar. Pixel 6 Pro has three cameras, including a telephoto lens with a 4x optical zoom. Pixel 6 has the same great cameras as the Pixel 6 Pro, just no telephoto. We're leaving telephoto to the pros, you could say. So that's a little disappointing, too. I don't like it when two models of the same phone have different features. So like Galaxy S21 and S21 Plus are similar phones. Yeah, plastic back versus a glass back, but largely the same feature set. An S21 Ultra is not an S21. It's a Note. It has the digitizer, it has the higher resolution display, it's got a completely different set of cameras. It's not a member of the Galaxy S family. It's a Galaxy Note that they can charge you more to buy the S Pen. They're different phones. They should not be graded on the same continuum of smartphones. And as soon as you start messing with core features like camera modules, the Pixel 6 experience is going to be different than the 6 Pro. At least for like an iPhone Pro, you've got a trio of cameras, just the Pro Max has a larger main sensor. I feel like that's closer. I'd rather keep the trio of cameras and then maybe find some other opportunities to change. Like still give me a telephoto camera. Maybe it's just not the periscoping telephoto camera. But I digress. Back to the tweets. Hey, we're just going to call it Pixel 6 for the rest of this thread, but we mean both the Pixel 6 and 6 Pro. So hopefully there aren't too many differences between these. We made a chip. Pixel 6 is powered by our first ever SoC, Meet Google Tensor. So there's a little video here. I'm going to try and mute this. excuse me. Hopefully this doesn't copyright strike me, but here we go. Introducing Google Tensor, the brand new chip designed for Google, custom made for Pixel. They're showing us these renders of phones. There's like a chip that's slowly descending onto a logic board. They're flipping the shell around. That's the back of a Pixel 6 Pro, only on Pixel 6 and 6 Pro. Okay, so that didn't really tell us anything new. It's a chip, and it's called Tensor. Okay, moving right along. Where are we? We're halfway through this thread. The highlights of Tensor is that it can process Google's most powerful AI and ML models directly on Pixel 6. You'll see a transformed experience for the camera, speech recognition, and many other Pixel 6 features. So this machine learning is no joke. I've gone back and retested the Pixel 4 XL, and it still handily not only competes, but can often beat Snapdragon 888 for image manipulation. So as you're chewing up image data, the neural core, the coprocessor that was paired with the Snapdragon 855, who could use a Snapdragon 855? It's so slow. No, the 855 is still grotesque overkill for daily driver average consumers. But neural core is insane if an app can really make use of that image manipulation hardware. So if we're building that kind of machine learning hardware directly into the SoC, I'm really hoping we're going to see that similar jump. Let's say the CPU core of Tensor is 10% lower than an 888. That's good because you can't max out the 888. The 888 runs too hot, and every manufacturer has some kind of implementation of throttling, or the phone just runs so hot it throttles on its own. If Tensor is closer to an 865 in terms of CPU design and CPU overhead and CPU power requirements, but then has its own on-SoC custom coprocessors like Neural Core, then I would expect the practical application of this hardware to be incredibly high performance. My expectations are impossible to rein in. I'm way over the top. Okay, back to the thread. We wish we could show you some camera examples on Pixel 6, but that will need to wait. That said, if you want to see what Team Pixel can already do with a Pixel, check out our Instagram. All right, let's talk UI. Remember Material U from IO. Friendly reminder, if you don't, we have it bookmarked here on YouTube. Take a quick watch. Material U will be best on Pixel 6. Some pretty big words there from Google that their own operating system on their own hardware will look the best. The colors, the camera, the form, and what's on screen all work together in a single fluid experience. Here's another video. This one's 40 seconds long. Just going to make sure I've got it muted. We're seeing the Pixel 6. It's flipping around. We're seeing the different backplates and colors. And then it's sort of showing us like lock screen activity and widget activity and home screen stuff. Different clusters of widgets, different media player controls, a weather widget that looks really cute, a clock widget. Now we're going into wallpaper colors, wallpaper styles. I like this new clock widget. It's got kind of like a floating dot for the second hand, and it's got a really bubbly kind of cartoonish hour and minute hand. And then the background and the wallpaper are changing on the different phones. And again, it looks pretty cool. All right, that's Material U. Excuse me, take a drink of water. All right, switching gears for a bit, let's talk speech. Speech recognition is another foundational technology where you will see a huge improvement in Pixel 6. Tensor allows you to make big leaps in voice commands, translation, captioning, and dictation. Where again, Google was hugely ahead of the curve from Pixel 4, even on the Pixel 5 to a large degree. The software application of speech to text, actually and text to speech, was pretty formidable. Again, the first time if you ever played with live caption, I use it a lot. It's kind of like magic, where it's on device, you play a video file. So like I shot video of Lex when she was 3 and she's doing like babbling toddler baby talk. And we could in real time create closed captioning off of that video file that lived on the phone. We didn't have to send it up to a server. It didn't have to get transcribed, or speech to text algorithms didn't have to work it over. It was happening on the phone right then and there. So that kind of stuff to me still seems like science fiction. If we're improving on the recognition of human speech, how we interact with the phone, I'm really hoping that our voice assistants can start getting smarter. You know, like my ability to tell my phone to open an app and send a message, my ability to open an app and play a song. I'd love to be able to tell it to go through my Plex catalog and send Shin Godzilla to my office TV. You know, all in one very more natural speech kind of command. That's where I hope that this can go. They're not making that claim. I'm just setting my expectations too high. All right, moving right on. We're almost done here. We've got like 3 tweets left. Sorry, and I'll get back into the live chat. I promise. It's just, this is kind of exciting to get a little bit more of a sneak peek here. Last Pixel 6 area we're going to share for now is security. Pixel 6 is also built with the most layers of hardware security in any phone, asterisk, based on count of separate hardware security layers. I don't know what that means. If Tech Potato's still in the chat and he has any more info on that, I would greatly appreciate it. I might need to send a message out to Snubs and see if she can make heads or tails out of that claim. And one last piece of info. Pixel 6 and 6 Pro, powered by the brand new Google Tensor chip, are coming this fall. And that's all we're going to share for now. Thanks, Team Pixel, for hanging out for a preview of our first inside and out Google phones, Pixel 6 and 6 Pro. For more images and to sign up for additional info, click on this link here. So I'm gonna click on that. I'm going to exit out of here. I'm going to send in my 2 bits. But yeah. Pixel 6 is increasingly in a category where I absolutely adore what Sony is doing. I want specific competitors. I want more competition. I want more competition for everything. Different types of displays, different types of cameras, different types of audio solutions, different types of SoCs. Like, I get so lit up about MediaTek, right? The Dimensity 1200 just sounds like such a cool competing chipset in this market right now. And if we left it all up to Qualcomm, Snapdragons, and Exynos, I think we'd be kind of disappointed in some of the trajectory over the last 2 years of high-end and premium-tier SoC. So when I see that Google's making their own, I get very excited about that, because the Pixel then represents a different conversation. We should have higher expectations for it. We should judge it more aggressively for long-term support, software support, updates. But I also feel like Google has made a very good faith effort for improving the quality of the experience on their phones through software. The Pixel 5 is a very different animal today than it was at launch. And it's gotten better and faster and more powerful over these successive software iterations. And I feel like that deserves a ton of credit for a phone that was kind of panned. Oh, it's like their best phone, but it only has a mid-ranger processor. Like, that doesn't sum up the experience. SoC tells you nada about what it's like to really use that phone as I punch my desk. So I think we just need to be more specific. I'm not telling people to avoid the A88, but I'm telling them, if you don't have sort of specific laptop grade high performance compute needs out of your phone, I think you can find better experiences with last year's flagships or with mid-rangers today. And I don't feel like that nuance makes it through. I feel, especially for a lot of techies, it's like, oh, I got a Poco and it's got the bestest chip and it was only $200. And you're like, great, that's good. That is one part of the conversation. If I'm talking about being a mobile podcast producer, I'm not going to take a laptop and an audio interface and all this mess. I want to do it from my phone. It's real good. And most of my podcast mixdowns now come from my phone because it's actually faster than like my main desktop workstation. And I don't have to sit right in front of these monitors. I was cutting podcasts on the road, finishing them off from my phone. Now, in a situation like that, I can heartily point to a OnePlus 9 Pro just kicking the pants off of my LG V60. That is an application where I can say that additional compute power comes in handy and it is accessible to you consumers. You can't glean that from a Geekbench. You can't glean that from any type of synthetic benchmark. You got to use a real app and time the performance of completing a task on that app. And I feel like I'm still one of the only people that's doing that outside of gaming. And it's making me crazy because, again, we're going to judge Pixel 6 by Geekbench scores that tell you nothing. Zero. They actually get in the way and will cloud the real world conversation. The real world performance conversation. That's what I meant to say. I don't know what actually came out of my face. It's all a mess up there. So yes, increasingly getting very excited about Pixel 6. So this thread, my reactions, my hot takes. The only thing that kind of made me a little sad is I was hoping Pixel 6 was going to have the same camera stack. So I'm probably going to lean Pixel 6 Pro just for the full camera experience. And that's more out of reviews. But I really liked spending time with the Pixel 5 for it being just a little Mighty Mouse phone. I was kind of hoping I'd be able to do the same on Pixel 6. Give me the same cameras. I'm okay if the screen resolution drops. Like, that's fine. I'm okay if it has a smaller battery. I'll just handle my charge, recharge, my daily use. You know, like, I can deal with that. But now I kind of need to lean Pixel 6 Pro if I'm going to do, like, the full camera testing and stuff. And that's kind of a little bit of a bummer. So, but anyway, coming this fall, hopefully in the same time window as, like, iPhone 13. I feel like that's the most appropriate fight now. Google first-party hardware, first-party software, unique features, especially unique software coming to Pixel first. The updates have been phenomenal. Feature drops have been really fun. I think Google has significantly changed up the relationship between consumers and their phones over like the old Nexus line. Like, the old Nexus line was more, a little more developer focused. Price performance was the main argument to make. Pixel 6 looks like it's going to be high tech, premium tech, specific. You know, there's something super unique about making your own SoC. And we should have that expectation that now we should have an even higher tier of hardware software synergy and longer term software improvement, software support. So I'm probably leaning pro, you know, like Barry. You know, everyone should just do what Barry's doing. No, come on. The live chat's going too fast. I'm clicking on the wrong comments. I'm going pro. Same here, Juan. Paul Puri, can it run Crysis? I'm absolutely positive. You heard it here first, folks, that if you want to play Crysis, you just play it from another computer and stream it to your phone. It'll work great. That was such a dumb joke. I'm sorry. I'm going to scroll up through some of this chat because I do want to try and get into some of this conversation here, too. Now I overscrubbed and now I'm coming back down. From Sam from 20 miles. Hardware security. We'll make it run so hot you can't even hold it. I feel like that's Xiaomi's strategy. Like, we're not going to put any limiter on your GPU. We did throttle the CPU performance, but we're not going to hold you back from your graphics. But at some point, you're not going to be able to hold the phone. From Aditya Anil. So we're just not going to talk about the headphone jack, eh? Well, first of all, we shouldn't have any expectation that there's going to be an audio focus from Google hardware first. Google strategy is going to be a little bit more like Apple's, and I think they're going to try and push more people over to their Pixel Buds. What I'm hoping is that we see good support for USB DACs. I'm hoping the camera app will allow us to use a USB DAC as the audio input, and that would be really, really cool. I mean, if we get that, that's immediately an audio tier above what OnePlus offers. It kills me that there's no input on a OnePlus 9 camera. And Nick Fell, exactly this. The biggest reason I don't use assistants is they can't reliably do play album through this music player app. And if I could Star Trek style tell the phone to interact with an app, pull that up, and then interact with information in that app, I would immediately use assistants substantially more. Most of my interactions for Google Assistant are very, very, very basic web searches and like setting timers and calendar reminders. DTNL, 50 Shades of Grey, the phone. I mean, like a lot of us are in the same boat, Steve. I just want a Pixel with a headphone jack and, dare I say, micro SD slot. I could live without both if the rest is a home run of a phone. And again, it's going to be different kinds of conversations. I feel like what you're describing there, if those are the features that you're really going to dig on, Xperia 5. Xperia 5 Mark III is probably going to be your jam. Xperia 1 probably in the running too. It's the last one. It's the unicorn phone for having expandable storage and a headphone jack. And especially for the Xperia 1, also all of the other lifestyle and premium tier smartphone features that we would want. You know, HDMI input, wireless charging and reverse wireless charging, that crazy display. I mean, that's the gig. It's if you don't, or if you can find another solution, like I've got the THX Onyx right here on my desk, you can go with something else. But, you know, pairing a good DAC with a Pixel is going to be at least $100. Well, no, I mean, you can get really good DACs for like 50, but I'm just saying. Mm-hmm. From Gabaletta. Let's read through this. I'm more interested in what this chipset brings to the table that no other chipset have versus how much it can score on a synthetic benchmark. I'm really interested in the camera hardware and what they are bringing on this device. Because this is also going to be the first larger camera sensor Pixel. And Google's game for computational photography still is second to none. I know a lot of people are like, oh yeah, the iPhone can totally do this. Cool. But I've got my sister and her husband are on Pixel 3As and they're sending, you know, pictures of their pets and their son. And it's this is a Pixel 3A, you know, this is like a, they bought it like half price while signing up for service. Like this is a $200 smartphone investment that is still photography wise going toe to toe with iPhone 12 Pros. Similar camera sensors, similar features, and I'd still say better HDR and low light processing. I feel like you're pretty good. I'm way behind here. I'm making jokes about my desk thumping. I just got so excited I had to punch my desk. Simon's a hypno, but can it run Crysis and feel good in the hand? I love it. That's going to be someone's comments. Like, well, I was holding the phone and I really don't like how this camera bulges. Like, that's not how you hold the phone. Gabaletta predicting bad techies about the Pixel 6. Does the screen have terrible viewing angles? Does it not have the bestest chipset? Can it open the snapbooks or the face apps a microsecond faster? I feel like this is going to be judged on every hack comparison of like, well, why wouldn't you just buy a Galaxy? I mean, it's already cheaper and you can do a trade-in and it's going to be better. Because you can see on this score, I did an app speed launch and the Galaxy was faster. And like, I'm so tired of that being the level of average consumer, because average consumers don't degaff. They don't give a fuck about that kind of techie commentary. So why are we pretending that we're talking about average consumers when we're not doing what average consumers do on their phones? And from Pakostin, let's just cover this. With all the focus on picture video, why no video out from the USB, Google? It's not like you can gasp, view the image on a 4K monitor. That's going to be my other main sticky spot with a Pixel. Like, I was really bummed using the Xiaomi for how powerful that phone is, that it's a USB 2 USB connector, and there's no video out. So I'm really hoping that this is one of those quiet features they're working on. Like, Google's already provided the framework and the backbone for a desktop mode. LG took that, and Screen Plus became a phenomenal windowed style work experience. Samsung's did their own solution. Huawei did their own solution. I don't know what Ready 4 uses, but I'm pretty sure TCL is using the Android backbone service, but they polished it up a lot. TCL's desktop mode is surprisingly good. I would love to see Google's take on a desktop mode, first party, plugged in through a cable on a Pixel 6, especially with this new chipset, this new SoC. I'd love for them to move on this. I don't think it's going to be one of the highlight features of this phone. I don't think they're going to do it. And if they do, I think it's going to be more as a push to make it kind of like Samsung's, where, oh, you can use it over Wi-Fi. Like, I don't want to use it over Wi-Fi. I want to use it over a cable and plug it in directly to something that's better than using it on another whole computer or trying to send it with a ton of lag to my TV. From Copacash. So when the Pixel 6 is faster than the Galaxy, what will their argument be? If it's any similarity to some of my Samsung coverage, they'll just tell you you're running the tests wrong, or that they don't matter, or that average consumers don't use their phones that way, or that my Galaxy never lags, so you must have a problem unit, or that you need to acknowledge that people don't use your phones like you do, when that's the argument against their own argument. But Samsung Knights are very flexible when it comes to dismissing the results from someone who shows comparing and contrasting data on their precious galaxies. I'm being really mean there, but it's kind of true. So we're getting into kind of the last 20 minutes here. And I want to talk about how sublime and transcendent it was to listen to some really expensive headphones. Odyssey has been a really exciting company for me to follow over these last couple of years. My audio consumption tastes have been very practical. Years of recording in studios. And then for when we moved out to LA, I also got a lot of work as a location sound mixer. I was a sound supervisor on a number of failed pilots. I've been a boom mic op. I've been an actual location mixer. And I've done a little bit of work in post-production trying to clean up audio tracks. Literally, it's just like a function of like just trying to get dialogue usable again so that actors don't need to go into a booth and re-record. Like, you don't have to do ADR. So my music and my entertainment consuming habits have been largely informed by more practical gear. If I'm out on a location shoot, it's even more important to me that the hardware I'm using is durable than that it sounds amazing. So I was like using Noble IEMs because I liked at the time, I was using a bunch of old Shures, but I kept killing the cables on them before I would spend enough, to get IEMs with, detachable cables. But I got some Nobles and like, oh man, these are great, especially for location, mixing. They were not super good for, music listening in a quiet environment. But then my cans would often be things like DJ style HD25s. If you've ever seen those old Sennheisers, I used to use them in my reviews a lot back in the day because I was genuinely using them in studios and on location shoots. But it's like you would see them often in sports broadcasts. That plastic kind of split V, all of the cabling was sort of external on the ear cups, perfectly circular and on ear, not over ear. Because they would clamp, like they would just smush your ears to the side of your head. And it was a very high degree of passive audio noise rejection. So I would work all day and stuff like that. And then if I listened on consumer gear that was more colorful, it would sound wrong. It's only been recently that I've kind of been coming back out of analytical flat or reference grade flat or sort of studio style reference monitor flat and finding some other color and tuning in my audio kit. You kind of stray a little with some Behr Dynamics. I was listening through some AKGs. There's always been some travel with Audio Technicas. I just really dig Audio Technica as a brand. Sony's make phenomenal gear. I still need to get my hands on some XM4s. I've not given them a listen yet, and I feel like I'm not doing my job correctly by not playing with some XM4s. But Odyssey kind of came around a while back where I was still doing a ton of stuff weekly over at Newegg, and I did not get it. We don't play with planar magnetic driver headphones in voice recording. Like that's not a studio headphone that you'll see in recording studios for voiceover work. Typically, it's more practical and more streamlined. It's a more straightforward kind of audio capture and presentation. So I played with the Mobius, and I didn't really get them at the time or why they were a big deal. I kind of tried to rectify that back. But what really kind of woke me up were the LCD ones. So these are, they've gone on sale for a lot cheaper, but full retail, these are $400 planar magnetics, simple, clean presentation, kind of a plastic build quality. But the driver in this ear cup is a big rectangle flat surface. They're mostly open back. I think these are a little more contained than a lot of other open headphones. But what we get out of Odyssey's reproduction here is aggressively articulate. The way that a planar magnetic driver shakes the air that goes into your ear is different than a lot of other dynamic drivers. And so you don't get this. I don't feel like you get the same hardcore right in the gonads punch on bass, but the entire instrument spectrum, the entire room that you can listen to is far more articulate and everything is covered more with more nuance. So that's a very long-winded way of kind of detailing, you know, kind of where I came from and then what are some of the things that I've been excited to listen to as I've gone down the more audiophile route and not the practical recording audio route. So we get to the Odyssey Carbon. And the Odyssey Carbon are ridiculous. They're $4,500 headphones. Open back. They've got this new electrostatic transducer. This is Odyssey's first electrostatic headphone. But what I want to pull up here, and while I'm going to talk over it, is their UCLA announcement. So I'm going to mute this because, again, I don't want issues with audio. But the technology for this headphone was born out of a medical need to make patients more comfortable in MRI machines. Now, MRI machines vary across the world, and UCLA's are kind of super fancy, but it's this teeny tiny little claustrophobic chamber, and I'm showing this video right now. They're actually sliding someone in, but the actual articulate pulses of this scanning mechanism can hit 130 decibels. It is one of the most challenging environments to make acoustic hardware, and it's one of the loudest man-made solutions you can be in. Now, some of them are quieter, but a lot of them are going to be very, very loud and uncomfortable environments to be in, where a patient needs to hold as still as possible as these magnetic pulses are kind of scanning through through your tissue. Here, here's a look at the human brain through an MRI machine. So this is challenging for the acoustic problem, because they're making this headphone that it's closed back, and it's got active noise canceling, and it's got microphones, and it's got, so they can talk to the doctors on the other side of the glass. It's incredible technology. But the other thing is, this is magnetic resonance. This is a magnetic scanner. So you can't have ferrous metal in the construction of your headphones. It disrupts the scan, and it can degrade the quality of the scan. So even down to the cable, they use this big old thick fiber optic cable that runs along the patient's chest, just to kind of keep out of the way of the scanning material. But at the end of this whole process, this is a 4-year collaboration with UCLA, you arrive at a new kind of electrostatic diaphragm, a new kind of film that has its own unique audio properties. So, I mean, already I get really defensive about this kind of stuff. It's kind of what burned me out on reviewing high-end microphones. I kind of got my start in video as a reviewer reviewing recording equipment. I would sit there and I break down, like, you know, I just spent time with a Neumann U87. And this is what I think about it. And this is where I think it's the right application. It's a $3,000 microphone. And I have zero issues recommending it for these types of applications, or if you know the quality of sound you're looking for. And invariably, I'd get a bunch of wannabe voice actors going, yeah, but I've got a $100 USB mic that sounds just as good. And someone else said that it was like 95% of the sound of a U87, and that you can use all these plugins and filters to make it sound just like a U87. And it's exhausting. I mean, I got burnt out reviewing voiceover gear because people didn't want to hear. There were specific instances or specific needs where this was the right audio tool for the job. They wanted me to just keep telling them, you can get exactly the same sound for $100. Or if you do this, this, and this, you can still get that. I mean, even like Jay's Two Cents went off on that rant about the Shure SM7B. And instead of like looking up how to use the Shure SM7B, he went off on this tear about, well, I can use a Blue Yeti, and I can use this plugin and this filter, and it's going to sound just like an SM7B, except that it didn't, because he didn't know how to use the SM7B, and he was using it wrong. You know, like, instead of expanding out of the starter level conversation, the entry level conversation, where so much of YouTube is primed for the like explained style of video, people like me, we get burnt out because I still want to keep learning. I still want to keep experiencing. And I want to have that same excitement when, you know, I got my first pair of really nice location mixing IEMs, and I was able to kind of join a headphone community and an earbud community, and we're geeking out about this kind of stuff. I still want that feeling today. Like, I still want to hear new nuance and hear new presentation and explore new ideas. But if I share that with a community of people that are primed for the absolute lowest level, then it's all just going to be confrontation. It's all going to be defensive. You're saying nice things about a $4,500 pair of headphones? Well, you must mean that everyone should use that, and you're trashing my AirPods Max, or you're trashing my XM4. And I don't think people realize like how hostile those comments come across.
Hey, podcast listeners, I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to SomeGadgetGuy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch.
Like, every hobby has an enthusiast level. You know, like, why would you spend thousands and thousands of dollars to make a car run a quarter mile 0.2 seconds faster? I mean, you could spend thousands less and be 90% of the way there. Isn't that good enough? And I feel like a lot of this, we just get lost in that conversation where beyond a certain tier, and I'd say it's a pretty low tier. I mean, once you start spending a couple $100s on a pair of headphones, quality doesn't scale the same way. When you jump from the disposable 10-cent included in the box with your smartphone headphones, and you jump up to something simple like $20 Chinese IEMs, like my KZ-ES4, always in arm's reach, because for $20, this is a startling upgrade over the $5 earbuds that you'd normally buy that complement your phone. You immediately jump into a wider reproduction of audio, lower distortion, lower noise, more color, a different kind of tuning. You instantly hear a different kind of quality. When you go from like $20 to $200, you're still moving up that chain of better cabling, better transducers, better drivers, better material science for how all of this is enclosed. You can kind of hear quality improve in that way. But once you crest that couple $100, you start getting into like $400 or $500 solutions, it becomes less about clarity, about noise or distortion. I mean, all those things do still improve, but what your ear is more likely to interact with is specific color, different types of tuning. The difference between a really expensive traditional dynamic driver and a really expensive planar magnetic is going to suit your specific tastes. And there isn't a right answer. One isn't better than the other for the same price. They are different categories of device. It's kind of like taking a really expensive car that can run the quarter mile fast is probably not the best car to go and take to a really technical track with lots of loops and curves. Two cars probably cost about the same, but one is going to be much better for a rapid burst of straight line acceleration, and the other is going to be way better for tackling a hairpin turn. That's what we're talking about here. And it's just hilarious because I'm talking about a $4,500 pair of headphones, and that's not at like the top of the market. Like, that doesn't take you to the extreme. That's like upper pack. It's upper tier. But like, we could always point to some like Sennheisers at $60,000 of amp and headphone with custom trim marble on the headphone amp. You can always go higher. So $4,500 actually becomes something near the end of someone's journey. It's not a solution you would ever recommend to someone starting out with fresh ears that don't know what they're listening for. But it's not necessarily the rich luxury flex that people try to make it sound like. Like, oh, this is just a vanity project. You're just spending a lot of money on snake oil. People can't even hear the difference. No, you can. If you start listening for what you really like about your music, you'll totally hear those differences, but it gets more specific. You know, what I really liked about the Odyssey Carbon probably wouldn't do a good job here in my office. I don't know that I would get $4,500 of enjoyment out of those headphones because I have such poor control over my listening environment. If I really wanted to get the most out of those headphones, I'd want as little distracting me as possible. And that would mean a different type of audio reinforcement than I have in a functional office studio here. So it's not as simple as like, well, diminishing returns. You know, like you spend $50,000 on a sports car and then you need to spend another $50,000 to make it go a little bit faster. That's not it. For headphones, it's you start spending thousands of dollars on audiophile equipment. You're doing that to narrow down the audio tuning till it's perfect for you. That, at least that's my argument for audiophile. People, there are plenty of people that are going to disagree with me, but I like specific solutions for specific uses. I'm not going to take my nice fancy planar magnetics on an airplane because they're open back and they're vented. That's the wrong environment to take my nicer headphones to a place that's really noisy. I'm not going to enjoy that experience. But when we start talking about something like this, this is like end game. You know, this is like getting to the completion of an audio listening chain experience that is going to be super fine tuned to the individual that enjoys that entire structure. You shouldn't start there, but getting to that point can be really satisfying if you click in and that's the kind of hardware that you vibe with. But it's tricky. I mean, you've got to go through different types of amps. You've got to go through different types of DACs. You've got to go through, maybe you don't like electrostatics and you do want planar magnetics. Someone was in my comments just saying like, hey, there's a new type of headphone that's a ribbon. And you're like, I've played with ribbon mics. I don't know that I would like that in a headphone. But again, they're different. So it's not a continuum of gooder and badder linked to one dollar amount that we should expect. It doesn't work that way. But again, that makes it very difficult to express this. It's very experiential. So I go down to the Odyssey headquarters, and I mean, a lot of this stuff is kind of repeated from the video that I published. You can catch that video for a better edited version of me sharing my thoughts. I am a junkie for detail and articulation. I do not like heavy, thick, dull bass kind of farting all over my mids. I don't like shrill, crystal upper air. I kind of need a little bit of a roll off just for my unique, hearing loss and hearing damage. It's that stuff gets super brittle and very uncomfortable very fast. And I have trained myself for critical listening in the mids because that's where a lot of human speech is. So if I don't hear the exact, like I need to hear exactly what the pedal was that controlled the distortion for that guitar. I need it to be perfectly recreated. Like I cannot handle like 90s hard rock or alternative rock where it just sounds like a continuous note. I need to hear the exact shape of that distortion or I'm not happy. Like I mentioned, you know, Rage Against the Machine, Killing in the Name Of is one of my go-to tracks. Because the distortion is really fragile. I don't listen to that song in my car because my car speakers are not good enough to display the distortion. It just sounds like a guitar note. It just sounds mushy. And I don't get that buzz, literally or figuratively, when the guitars kick in and the track really gets going. And so it's unsatisfying. I don't have that song on my car playlist. So again, it's a challenge because I want to bring more people into the fold and I don't want to scare them off by being that combative or confrontational audiophile stinky nerd we talked about at the beginning of this podcast. But it's also like we allow for every other hobby and every other enthusiast tier to have this like super niche kind of endpoint. Like look at really high quality gaming monitors. You put that in front of someone and they're not going to know why it's impressive. So, I mean, yeah, it's like 1080p pixels and I can watch my movies on it. You start out with something that's just a big dumb screen that you watch TV on. And then maybe you care a little bit more about the type of technology. Is it an LCD? Is it a QLED? Is it an AMOLED? Back when we were all hyped up about, you know, different types of flat panel HD TV. It's a plasma. Ooh. We're going to be getting into like micro LED and stuff like that. The backlighting, maybe you care about the difference in backlight quality or strobing. Do you care about higher refresh rates? What about that peak brightness? Because then that's going to influence how you enable HDR. What certification for HDR do you have? And then at a certain size, how do you pair that with a high quality audio solution? Is this something that's going to be mounted in your living room? Is this a monitor that you're going to sit right in front of? What does it do for gaming? Does it tear frames in gaming because it doesn't have an adaptive refresh rate? And suddenly you're spending quite a bit more on an imaging device than the average consumer will use just to watch TV. Now, we don't blink too much at that display nerd. But for some reason, if you start trying to describe the audio experience in a similar way, people shrug it off. I'm not an audiophile. Oh, I don't care about that. You're describing things that just sound like you're making them up. And you're like, you start talking about like Rec 700 and BT 2020 and all of these other display descriptors, you sound just as nerdy. It sounds just as fake. So I get a little defensive because the mission is get people listening to better quality stuff. And, you know, when I would walk around or when I would like share with friends, a pair of DT770s from Behr Dynamic, you can get those easily for under $200. And I plug them into like, at the time, like an LG V40 or a G8. Like, here's this little phone. You plug in these really thirsty cans, studio grade cans. You put them on someone's ear. And I'd say like, hey, what's one of your favorite songs? And we play it. And they'd never heard their song that way before. Like ever. Not just like, oh, well, I know the nuances of this song because I sit in front of really nice speakers and I know what this song should sound like. No, like for my wife, when we finally got her molded ear tips on her earbuds, she went through and like voraciously consumed our entire Beatles catalog again. She was almost 40 and had never heard her favorite catalog of music. Not to that detail, not to that clarity, not to that quality. So that took some doing. We had to get really nice drivers. Mi Audio MX3s are $150, and it was like another $150 to get her ears molded. So those are $300 earbuds. And I think my wife's ears are worth it. My daughter has her own little music player. She's 5 and she is amazingly, taking care of this little $30 MP3 player that we got her. But we did splurge on some Puro Quiets. It's like almost $150 pair of headphones, but there's tiny ear cups for little kids, active noise canceling, and they've got a volume limiter so that we can keep her from jacking the volume up too high. And you're like, she is doing an incredible job of taking care of her own gadget. Like I actually said, this isn't one of Daddy's old phones. We bought this just for you. If you break it, we're not going to replace it. You need to take care of this. And like literally yesterday, I was posting on the Discord that I could hear her jumping around in her room, singing along to Beastie Boys Intergalactic. Like, she's in it. She's getting it. And she's 5. So again, the whole conversation is just, I shouldn't say the conversation, the whole presentation of what Odyssey has done here is just so stinking cool. It's interesting. There's a medical component to this. And along the way, they took this medical tech and they realized like, hey, you know, it actually sounds pretty good. I'm showing like video clips of them describing the electrostatic transducer, these carbon nanotubes suspended in a film. I mean, like it's bleeding edge audio science tech, and it came from a real need. It came from a medical concern, trying to get better MRI scans, trying to keep patients more comfortable. And then they were like, hey, you know what? Like, this sounds pretty good. We could just make some headphones out of this. So I would highly recommend checking out. I'll link it in the show notes. I think if you're in the live chat, I can send it here in the live chat too. It's just such an interesting story. And that gets me excited. There's like a human component to it. There's medical, there's science. And then at the end of this whole chain, I got to listen to headphones that just did an absolutely wonderful job of reproducing music that I knew very well. You know, like I have an expectation. I think this is what the song should sound like. And on my really nice headphones, like my Sennheiser 599s, my Beyerdynamic DT770s, that's what the song should sound like. And then I stepped up to planar magnetics, and it wasn't that the planars did something to change what the music sounded like, but it was like the planars were able to get out of the way of the music even more. So they sounded more like what I thought they should sound like. And then using these electrostatics, it was just like another evolutionary jump. They didn't sound overly manipulative, different. These songs sounded even more like what I thought they should sound like. And trying to compare and contrast, and I had my LCD ones, and you're like, there is such a clear difference between this $400 headphone and this $4,500 headphone. And it didn't take away from the $400 headphone. It's not like I'm pulling out my LCD ones going, such garbage. That's not it. It's just this huge appreciation for a technological leap and advancement. And it's such a fun, upper premium kind of experience. It's so unique. It's so different. And yet immediately grokkable. It's accessible at the same time. I don't know. I'm now starting to wax even more poetic and philosophical when we should probably start wrapping this up. But again, it's such a good story. So at least if you're inclined, I mean, you can catch my video. My video is like 15 minutes long where I repeated a lot of the stuff that I've said in my podcast, but at least catch Odyssey Carbon Electrostatic Headphones on the Odyssey YouTube channel. It's a good story, and it's an interesting idea to kind of keep an eye on as we look at some of the other advancements in audio tech that are happening around the consumer level. Better streaming quality, more high-res options and solutions. I think there's an opportunity here that I hope we don't let it pass us by. So we can go ahead and start closing this out, but I did want to get through some of these comments here. You guys are making fun of my name as I'm getting all like Twitter-pated about audio. From Steve from Q3 Becker, I do want to see an F1 car race in a rally style course. Please get on that, Mr. Beast. From Nick Fell, when you need room correction for your headphones, they're too open. You need speakers. I don't have the right setup for speakers. And again, I kind of pride myself on a headphone collection that kind of enables a certain kind of audio consumption. At some point, I want to set up a really good listening station, open air speakers, really craft the reflections in a room. It's going to be a long time before I can dedicate that space to that kind of challenge. So in the meantime, it's headphones. Headphones get the gig done. From Nick Fell. Also, the funny part is 4,500 is entry level in speakers. So now there are a bunch of jokes at my expense. Simon says Hypno saying flight of the Bumble gadget guy. Ein kleiner Juan music. Gary the Fireman, absolutely agree. Tim Cumberfield's bass and Brad Wilk's drums are one of the best rhythm sections of the 90s. Enter San Juan. Ain't no Juan shine when she's gone. From McCorcoran, kind of exactly it, right in line. I used an LG phone, would be a pretty convenient way to listen to Apple Music these days. Yeah. Actually, I mean, if you think about it, one of these dongle DACs is going to be about $200. I think it's pretty easy to get your hands on an LG G8 for under $200. And again, it'd probably be used or a refurb or something like that. But you'd have very similar DAC and amp output, and it would be a whole multimedia device. You just have less control over your amp. It still does bug that there's the impedance trigger on the LG amp. And I wish they would just let us toggle it manually. So you have to be very specific about the headphones you connect and how you connect them. But yeah, the quality and the output are there. They'll go toe to toe with current audio reproduction solution, especially portable ones. I'm not talking about like having a desktop amp and DAC and all that stuff. I'm talking about portable. From McCorcoran, I don't know these. The CCI coffee bean is only $12 on Amazon right now. It's a pretty sweet little IEM. I don't know CCI. Is that like CCA? Because I also had to bring out my CCA C16s, and I had to compare them up against like my Mi Audio XM4. Someone on the Patreon asked about my Xperia. Like, I don't know about all your charts and graphs. What about these IEMs? And he has like $1,000 IEMs that are 5 balance drivers per ear. And you're like, well, it does a good job with my 8 driver per ear CCA. So I would imagine it'd probably handle your expensive IEMs. But if you've got a dynamic driver in there, then the Xperia can get maxed out on the amp pretty easy. Just all, don't let me, Juan. Juan. Ooh, woohoo. So McCorcoran, we talked about this as saying you should donate a used LG phone to your daughter. We started specifically with a $30 MP3 player because if she breaks it, at some point she probably will. I've been very encouraged by how well she's been taking care of it. We've been on a road trip now. She kept it safe. We didn't have to sit there and nag her about it. Like, this is her thing. And she's doing a wonderful job of keeping it safe. But we also didn't want her to have something that would be internet connected without us being able to observe how she's using it. So we started with an MP3 player, but I don't think it's going to be much longer before I'm going to trust her with something like an old phone if she wants to use that as more of a multimedia device. From McCorcoran, if she finds out she has a right to party, you're in trouble. Well, we're going to keep her first with the more age appropriate part of the Beastie Boys catalog. Like, we feel pretty good about Intergalactic. I might try Sabotage. I don't know. Anyway, Lex's headphones are adorable. They're electric neon pink with a white headband. But they also have surprisingly good active noise cancellation. Those little Puros are no joke. From Copacash, I've never done an MRI. So this is Copacash's comment. I've done an MRI and the sounds are ear piercing. The earplugs they gave me were slipping out and I couldn't put them back in. That sounds like my personal hell. I'm already a little claustrophobic and super sensitive to noise. And that sounds awful. I can't even imagine. Gary the Fireman is saying I got a copyright strike. Yeah, probably. From Vazicos 8, is there a high-end USB DAC that also charges the phone, or the electrical noise is too much and the only solution is dual dongles? No, I do not know of anything that will charge the phone. But you can go battery powered, like a Q3, a Fio Q3, or an iFi hip DAC. So at least it's not drawing power off of the phone. They're just working together. You can get battery powered that way. I don't know of anything that will charge the device, I think you'd need a much larger battery for that. And from a DTNL, yes. The answer is yes. Are dynamics harder to drive than balanced arms? Balanced arms are tiny little sound-generating apparatus. Dynamic drivers are typically a little bit larger and more like traditional speaker cones. And they do seem to take more juice to get a good to get a good drive, to drive them well. So on the Xperia 1 Mark III, my Mi Audio XM4s are two or three clicks below maximum volume for what I would consider to be a comfortable listening volume. On my CCA C16, which are all balanced arms, but it's 8 balanced arms per ear. I don't know. I'm like at 30% of the volume rocker on the Xperia. That Xperia amp is pretty weak. So if you do a multi-driver IEM, it's very likely you'll be at the upper limit of what that Xperia can generate. Simon says hypno noise canceling MRI. Well, that's what's, again, I think it's like magic. The medical version of the Odyssey Carbon do have active noise canceling. How do you do that in a headphone without interfering with the magnetic fields of an MRI? Again, that sounds like magic to me. That sounds like science fiction, and I wish people were getting more excited about that. All right, folks, my voice is failing, so I'm going to go ahead and wrap this up. Tons of audio tech to talk about. I'm getting back into the swing of some phone videos too, especially after the road trip, and I want to do a follow-up to the TCL Nextwear now that I'm back in the Gadget Lab. I've been back in the Gadget Lab. And just using it around the house, because it is kind of interesting having a face wearable display before I finally have to send it back to TCL. They haven't asked for it back. So I'm just going to keep holding on to it until they're like, hey, Juan, give it back to us. And they do grabby hands. So, yeah, a lot of stuff. I might even be trying to do an IEM giveaway, a $200 pair of IEMs. I need to talk to the manufacturer that sent me out some demo units. But it could be kind of fun. I'm not entirely sure where I'm going to do that giveaway. I might only do it here on the podcast, as opposed to making it like a Gleam link or something like that. Maybe just do kind of a random comment draw, and then I'll send the IEMs out to someone from a random number generator. So stay tuned. It should be fun. And definitely listen to some cool music. Or watch some fun movies with good sound design. Play some good games. That's the other one. I want to do a gaming headset comparison. You don't need to know all that. I've got the list right here, my little notepad of all the stuff that I need to shoot. So, on that note... Man, I'm going to stick this landing. Thanks everybody so much for watching, for sharing, subscribing, all of the people that were supporting Adrian and the Whip, Gary the Fireman, just awesome. Thank you so much for all of the subs and the support and keeping these conversations going on whatever platform you're consuming them on. It means a lot. And again, it's so refreshing to start my week this way. Paul, what are you doing? Paul just gifted a bunch of subs to Rami Vaden, Steel's Finest, One Hell of a Boy, Braz Ghost, Blue Man Rule, Lori Elf, Fox 777, Orod Tech, Lost Divine, and TK Bay. Paul just hooked up TK Bay. Paul, what are you doing, buddy? Thank you so much, man. That's amazing. You just catapulted himself to number one on the stream chat just as we're wrapping this up, and I greatly appreciate it. So folks, I want you to have an amazing week with your tech. I want you to do awesome with your technology. I want you to be awesome with your technology, and I'll catch you all back here next week for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGG QA podcast channel. Be safe, wear a mask. Try and keep your head down. Let's get through this together. I don't want to see anyone getting sick, getting hurt. And being safe, I think, is the better play. Even if it looks a little silly, I really don't want to see any of us getting messed up by this. So I'll catch you back here next week. I love y'all. Take care.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.